I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
Welcome, guys, to another episode of Cast Company Underrated Movies. My name's Alan.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Sergio.
And today, we're going to be talking about this very, very underrated film. It came out back in 2003. And apparently this guy, this dude, director Tommy Wiseau, apparently he's a Renaissance man because he's done so many things on this film. He directed it, he wrote it, he produced it, he starred in it.
He self-financed it himself. His own money. $6 million.
Exactly. The budget was $6 million.
Yeah, he utilized the resources that, you know, he had on hand, you know, just within, what was it, a couple of weeks he got this project together?
A couple of weeks within hand's reach somehow?
From writing it to filming it. Yeah, and like I think like a 3 weeks at most.
Yeah, this is an indie movie. It was before this time.
It was his own personal company that did it too. Oh,
okay. Yeah, it was with Soul Films, I think.
Soul Films, yep. And of course, if you guys haven't heard of it, obviously not super underrated. The Room is what we're going to be talking about today. The Room is pretty much a movie. The movie's basis is Tommy Wiseau's character. He's a successful banker living in San Francisco. He's engaged. Pretty much everything's going great for him, but unfortunately, his fiance is cheating on him. Julia Daniela is the actress that plays Lisa, and then Greg Sestero plays Mark, Johnny's best friend. Who is also cheating with Johnny's engagement or Johnny's fiance? So pretty much, yeah, that's the whole basis of the film. What did you guys think?
I thought it was very groundbreaking. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, coming from a self-made man and. Basically, the story, like we've seen it a bunch of times, you know, girl cheats on a guy who's, you know, a good guy, and his turmoils from that, you know, it all comes, you know, never ends good, and it all comes to a head at the end, and you know, you could see the passion and in it, and there was one moment that stuck out to me very cinematically. It was when, you know, the affair was starting and just you could see like this turn basically of this like kind of like we say femme fatale of and then painting a pretty interesting picture with the can, you know, the scene having the candles, the music, and
it was very romantic, very golden age.
Some guys cinema. Would say a very sexy dress, you know.
Oh yeah, the sexy red dress, iconic.
Yeah,
very iconic. But yeah, I know Sergio as well as I were like big fans of it. I mean, I want to hear what you think. I mean, obviously you and I have talked about it many times, so I want to hear what blew you away about it.
Well, you know, I'd only seen bits and pieces of this movie. I'd never actually sat down and watched the film from beginning to end before. So, you know, I knew like a lot of the iconic scenes, like the rooftop scene, you know, the scene where he goes and is, you know, virtually unrecognizable to the shop owner that he knows so well because he's the favorite customer and pets the dog, stuff like that. You know, so, but I had never actually, there was so many. I mean,
at first glance, you got to give it to her. She's probably older, you know, at first glance. You know, that's probably what the underlying...
And it's that attention to...
Like, how yeah. do you reckon? It's the
underlining theme of, you know, that he's supporting it has to be an elderly woman, you know, just showing how much he cares, you know, because she probably has cataracts at this point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but like, you know, seeing it from start, there's so many little gems in there that you don't get when you watch just the iconic scenes. There's stuff that I didn't even know happened in this movie, that there's characters that just come in, there's motivations and moments. Like, I didn't even realize that there was a cancer, I guess you would call it, subplot in the movie where the mom reveals that she has cancer. And I was curious what was going to happen with that. And when the movie ended, I was still very curious about what was going to happen with that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, like, transformative, like, characters. I mean, look at the psychiatrist.
Characters, arcs.
The psychiatrist, you know, like, he really, you can tell Sinestro knows what he's talking about, or that Wiseau knows what he's talking about when he's writing the dialogue for these psychiatrists, you know, for drug dealers, Chris R, you know, obviously he's... Chris R, as he is listed on the end credits.
Because there's so many, you know, because there's so many Chris's. You have to. It's very caring to be distinguishable about it.
It's film writing 101. You got to keep your Chris's straight. They teach you that on the first day of film class. But like, honestly, you know, seeing it in this way, and I mean, I had kind of heard that he died at the end because I had seen there's a kind of a movie about this movie, you guys might not even know about it, called The Disaster Artist, and I kind of got some of the general plot of it, of this movie, from that. But yeah, that scene where he kills himself at the end, it's powerful, it's moving, you know. I had never seen anything like it before. I'll just say, yeah, I've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah.
There's been some movies that have been, people want to say, are in the same category, you mm-hmm. know, stuff like Trolls 2, you mm-hmm. know, is another one that comes to mind, but this movie is beyond all of those, you know. Nothing comes close. Maybe Cats, but that's the only one.
Oh, see, yeah, there it is. Disaster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we got a bootleg copy of it right here. It's very
for those
hard
of you who
find.
Are just listening, yeah, they have some DVDs up here of The Disaster, or Blu-rays, excuse me, I don't know how you manage to get a Blu-ray, of The Disaster Artist and then Uncut Gems, which, as Sergio was saying before we're recording, this movie itself is an uncut gem.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Uncut gem.
But I mean,
always been under the radar.
I mean, me and the brother here, we were fortunate enough to be able to go to a screening of this movie in a theater. You know, support your local theaters, small business.
Yeah, it does go on in a lot of like indie theaters.
Yeah, and I mean, it's very hard to find. You have to, you know, basically, and it has a cultural, you know, kind of like influence, and it was very interesting. We got to see it live production. Unfortunately, you know, like we weren't able to see it because the Tommy Wiseau, the filmmaker, does tour with it, so we were unfortunate to see him then. We have seen him like in a couple of conventions. He hasn't to his demise, but I mean, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, just seeing him in real life, you could definitely tell, like, the talent coming off. And, you know, he
it's
hides it behind sunglasses, but
next
yeah.
To, it's like if you were standing next to, like, Chris Nolan or mm-hmm. David Fincher or Spielberg, you get that energy. Like,
yeah,
it comes out, it radiates off.
Yeah, I mean, he's always crowded by people, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He gave me a backpack. He said, hey, look, kid. One of the old men. Boom, here's a backpack. Take it. It was great. Like, it was like those football players throwing their jerseys at you. It was.
Yeah, but you don't need to be a football player, wear a jersey if you're playing football. You can do it in a tuxedo, as this film taught us.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, mm-hmm. Riveting. That scene like, where they're playing football. Like, I was actually going to mention that, how much I loved it. It just had so much meaning behind it and so much, like, it was just thrown into the movie for no reason whatsoever. But it made me feel so much.
No,
it made me
You know what?
Here.
It did. It was thrown in for a reason. It was to show the brotherhood of friendship and just the simplicity of throwing a football and just that connection that you could get from throwing a football between your bros.
It was a very dreamlike mm-hmm. sequence. And I remember having a dream mm-hmm. like that with my friends.
Mm-hmm. We very hetero. Suits.
Mm-hmm.
Very hetero.
Oh, yeah.
We were all in suits, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
mm-hmm.
like we were, you know, having gay sex or anything. We were just playing football.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it was. It was just showing how much they cared about each other and the love of the game.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's up to interpretation.
Yeah.
depends on the kind of person.
How American football is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How American Tommy is.
Ooh, sorry, guys.
There's nothing more American than American football. You know? Nothing more American. That's why they call it American exactly. football.
That's why it's
not
American
soccer
football.
Or Australian football.
Mm-hmm. Can I bring up one other thing that stood out in this movie? Could we talk about the soundtrack? Because it was very revolutionary. You know, he brought up some indie artists with this too, you know, keeping it in the simple, you know, and just like, yeah. Yeah, it was
very.
I mean, You Are My Rose spoke of the very deep, sensual, you know, act between mm-hmm. Between, you know, Greg Sestero's character and the girlfriend.
See, sadly, girlfriend. I missed some of those scenes because I watched it on YouTube. So, you know, they wasn't any of those explicit scenes.
Love scene?
Those, yeah. But those, you know, that's art, you know? So, you know, it's a shame that they couldn't include that on YouTube.
That's very disappointing because
You Are My
with
Rose.
Those scenes and the music, like I don't know if you guys have ever seen Beyond the Black Rainbow, but that score for that movie is so haunting and so powerful. I thought there's no way any other movie can beat this, and then I thought about The Room, and I was like, The Room.
Yeah, and then you realize yeah.
and every scene of that music, I was like, memorable.
Interestingly, I just read this today that apparently at the original screenings, Tommy was so impressed with the music that he would give a CD out to anyone who bought a ticket of the soundtrack. You know, that just speaks volumes
That's
to
amazing.
How much
just
he was
generous,
proud of
just
this.
Generous, you know.
He's a director.
He just wants to push it.
Yeah.
The fact that you know, there's an original soundtrack with original songs on top of an original score featuring tracks such as Chocolate is the Symbol of Love, that fits the scene where Tommy's friend says chocolate is the symbol of love and then has oral sex performed on him by another woman on Tommy's couch.
And you just, you know, it's the way it's shot in that scene is very, you know, it lets you imagine it because you just see her head go down and you see his reaction, his incredible acting. So, you know, you don't see anything happening there, but you know what's happening just based on that guy's face.
Yeah, it was very mature.
His face says it all.
It was very mature to not show the act being performed, but to show
exactly.
the reaction.
It's all about what you don't
it remind,
see.
It reminds
not what
me,
see.
Exactly. It reminds me of a film called Mandy. Where Nicolas Cage is watching
don't spoil
something.
It. I actually want to watch
yeah,
that.
I mean,
Nicolas
actually
Cage is watching
one.
Something mm-hmm. horrible, but instead of showing what's horrible being done, they show Nicolas Cage's reaction to it, and it's so much more powerful and much more effective than just showing the horrible, gory act. And I think that movie could pay a lot of homage and thanks and yes to Tommy the Room.
Well, it's like, you know, why Jaws was so scary is because you don't see the shark very often, mm-hmm. you know? And
what
this
makes
is,
a, the
this
scene
is like a
so
Jaws
sexual
of,
is you
yeah.
don't see the sex.
Exactly. This is like the and Jaws of see, sex, this the, movie. The,
and that's what makes it effective is because they take the elements of horror and they use it for other different things. See, it's a universal technique. It's the rule that makes you feel. That's
yeah.
called filmmaking.
And he does play a lot of really big homages to like all these great, you know, different, you know, like previous movies, like all these Tennessee Williams and Ed Wood movies, and like Orson Welles, and also
yeah,
I was
yeah
like,
we can't forget
Mark Damon.
James
He's,
Dean.
Mark is named after Mark Damon, his favorite actor.
Yeah,
but
James Dean,
the
reintroduction,
a classic yeah. reference to Rebel Without a Clock.
Yeah, the
you know?
Reintroduction of that line into this, you know, it's just a classic going into another classic, you know.
It's like poetry; it rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just great to see an old master of film pay homage to the previous, because film
yeah.
is film.
It's passing the torch.
It's passing the torch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, it. The thing is, I also want to talk about like this movie. You know, at first, like it took a while. Like it, you know, the big studios kind of ignored it. There was only one billboard advertising it. But I mean, I think me and Alan both found it the same way. Is that like its rights were so cheap at some point that Adult Swim was able to just kind of put it on late at night once
a
year.
I mentioned that. Yes,
yeah. And... yeah. So yeah, Alan, go for it. Talk all about it.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, coincidentally, I mean, you know, we both watched it the same night. I believe it was April 1st, 2009.
Yeah, I don't remember what April 1st I saw it, but I know I saw it on one April 1st because it's kind of a tradition that Adult Swim
for some does. Odd reason, it's a traditional.
Yeah, which is about April when 1st. This podcast is releasing. I want to say early April, late March, you know. So
may I comment on why I believe that's so?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Why?
Well, this film being released in 2003, this film is essentially a character study of a man being broken by the American dream, and he has
everything. Oh, Joker.
Yeah. So this now you have today these you have movies today like Joker.
Sorry, we're trying to take this serious. I'm sorry.
Excuse me. We have movies today that come out.
You know, Joaquin like give Joker, his Oscar to Tommy.
Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't for movies like The Room, which study man in society and how he loses it all to society and the things that society tells us that we should have and want, and really, is it really worth, then the Joker would not exist.
Yeah.
And honestly, Hollywood would not be ready for Joker if it was not for
Joaquin's speech was bullshit.
Why is he talking about milk? He should saying thank you, Tommy. Talk about
well,
milk
I mean, many
because Tommy milked Hollywood.
But many wanted Tommy Wiseau to be the Joker. But for this point,
that's very true. Because yeah. Tommy yeah. Wiseau,
there's actually a video on the internet. Test. You guys can look it up about where Tommy Wiseau is doing some Joker lines, and it's very moving,
riveting.
Riveting.
The Joker makeup, and he's in full costume. It's a full screen test of Tommy Wiseau as the Joker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, it's a shame we missed out on that movie.
What I liked about his performance that is even better than Joaquin's is that, like, he laughed from his heart. That you can feel the anguish, the pain he had growing up.
It's a real
up.
Joker
you know,
laugh.
His father was a drinker and all that stuff. And Joaquin just couldn't bring that to the table.
Yeah,
I don't know why. He should have got a raspberry, not an Oscar. I'm going to be so bold.
Like, no, honestly, you're right. Like, when he has that laugh right after he hears that horrific story about a woman that got beat up so bad she had to go to a hospital on Guerrero Street, and he just laughs and says, what a funny story. That's if it wasn't for that scene, there would be no Joker
that's
movie.
That's true. And listen. Scenes like that, they're just littered throughout the movie, where it takes your expectation of right and wrong, and it just throws them on its head. It's like, that's not how normal people react. It's like, you find out your mom is dying of cancer, and you go, I don't care. You find out that, you know, everybody loves you, but your wife is cheating on you with your best friend, and your best friend, it's like, well, what else am I going to do except throw a TV off of my apartment complex, hump my wife's sexy red dress, and then shoot myself in the mouth?
Mm-hmm.
It's those kinds of things. It's like, what drives a man, a beloved man in America, to do such a thing? And this kind of thing can happen today and still does happen today. And if it wasn't for this movie exploring those type topics.
Wait, Sergio, don't leave me in suspense. If it wasn't for this movie exploring these topics, what?
A charismatic jeweler, Adam Sandler, makes a high stakes bet that could lead to the windfall of a lifetime.
What are you
gonna look at? Okay.
That's the break.
In a precarious high wire act, that must balance business.
Are you just reading the fucking bad
ending
on
adversaries
on all sides?
I think so. Sergio lost.
Is the cat out of the bag?
Yeah, Sergio
lost.
We're done. I
lost. I
can't shit anymore.
I thought it was the okay. Well, I guess
that was fucking good. All right, April Fools, everybody.
April Fools.
Gets up the bag.
We're trying to go as far as we could with it.
But yeah,
Derek, you tried to like start bring it to the April Fools joke, but then Sergio took it to a different direction.
He went the Norm Macdonald route, and I love it. I was like, okay, I'm in it. Talk to me.
No. So sorry, anybody who was expecting Batman versus Superman. We're gonna do that one next week.
It's like a double April Fool's.
Double April Fool's. Yeah. So we're gonna do
double
that.
Bamboos.
The double bamboozle, but. Coincidentally, though, that the story of the April Fool's thing is actually true. So, pretty much how I found out about this movie. I mean, if you guys have already watched the movie, you guys probably get it. Like, it's going to be a prank or something when we're describing it. But Yeah, like I remember watching it. I was working at a hotel, graveyard shifts, and I would watch Adult Swim. And I remember the movie was like halfway on. I finished all my paperwork. And pretty much when I was doing my paperwork, I chilled all night till like 6 in the morning. And I just remember it's on and I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is horrible. And then I just kind of kept watching it. And then I was like, that was fucking amazing. I was like, what is that? That was so bad. And then they're like, we're going to show it again. And I was like, fuck yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, it's on like all night.
It was on the whole night.
So
and I was like, oh, it's April Fool's.
So So like we were saying, we saw this in the theater, but it was in like a special screening for before the Disaster Artist came out. So we got to see it before the Disaster Artist, which I really liked because, you know, knowing the source material, you
that one understand. Is actually A24 Disaster Artist.
Yeah, that's
And so, but rewatching it yesterday, which we did for this podcast, it's still so unbelievably like, what the fuck? Like, there was so many moments like
even
where
with, like the six sex scenes cut.
Yeah, so because we watched it on YouTube too, because it is impossible to rent still. So yeah, like that was my only like, oh, like we missed the "You are my rose, you are my rose."
Still buy it from Tommy directly.
I know, that's the thing.
I bought it from Tommy directly.
In the street. Be like, here's 20 bucks. And he's like, all right, hey, thank you.
You need to go to him.
But, yeah, like, it's just, there's so many moments where even him, who, like, has, like, seen it a couple of times, is even, like he just collapsed laughing. And we both collapsed laughing because there's just so many moments of, like, what?
Each viewing is just such a great experience. Each viewing, it's... I don't know. It's like something new each time. Either it's just like coming back to revisit it, or you're watching it and you find that you catch something that you didn't catch before, or just something stuff like that. It's just great every single time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a truly, truly baffling movie. Like, you're like, how did this? Like, this guy was insane. Like, he's a crazy. Like, I've watched a lot of bad movies. Like I was saying before, like Troll 2. Like, it's a bad movie, but it's kind of like. It's like, oh, this is funny because it's bad. Like, this is bad because it's like, what is even fucking happening? It's the best kind of good bad movie. Like, I would rather watch this any day than like something that's just okay, like Sonic the Hedgehog or something. Like, I had fun watching it. I'm never gonna watch it again. I could watch this movie a bunch of fucking times. This movie is insane. I've watched that rooftop scene over and over and over because it's just like.
Well, I mean,
there's another. We noticed another incredible. Rooftop like just cut. Remember where the psychiatrist is walking up and then it just cuts to
Mark. I almost choked. I took a drink of water and it was just
it just cuts to Mark just like lounging underneath
but he's like smoking weed.
Yeah.
But he's like
it just is a such a sudden cut where it's like
there, and it's so quiet and there's no sound. And it scared the shit out of me.
It was like it was a movie made by someone who understood how movies work, but didn't understand how, like, just stories work.
Yeah. Like, how to put the pieces like, together.
Yeah, because there's just so many things are introduced TV. That just I don't make sense that. And never come up again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why it's like a fever dream. It's like if you were to binge watch and fall asleep to, like, some really old soap opera, this is what you would dream of. Like after you, like let's say you eat a whole box of pizza and you fall asleep to watch it.
No.
You would dream.
Yeah. Going on that soap opera thing. When we were watching it yesterday, I finally described it to make it sense in my mind. Is that it's a fool's errand. It's basically like if you took a whole season or even the whole series of a soap opera, and just showed one scene from each episode and just cut it and cut just one scene from each episode together. That's how this movie flows because it's like, well, what? Like, there's just so many like cuts into the scene. Like, it's end to end. Yeah, it's complete. Like a season, but there's so many like missing scenes.
Just subplots in between. Never being finished.
This movie does not flow. It stutters because there's like scenes where it's just like. It starts off with, like, let's say Tommy and the psychiatrist. I swear to God. He's my favorite. But so like, Tommy's telling him his problems. He's like, these are all my problems. And then
the psychiatrist Mark comes
is like, or then the psychiatrist is like, well, I don't know how to help you, man. And then Tommy's like, but you're a psychiatrist. And then Greg walks in. He's like, what's wrong, Tommy? And Tommy's just like, women problems. And the psychiatrist is like, tell me about your problems. And then Tommy goes, stop trying to play psychiatrist with me all the time. I was like, one, you just talked about your problems, and now he's all like, I don't know how to help you. But then you immediately go, tell me about your problems. And then two, you go, help me, you're a psychiatrist. And then he does that whole double whammy, and then you pull like a quadruple whammy with, stop trying to be psychiatrist, man. And it's just like, what? And it makes your brain, I don't know, it's like the it's times like that where it's, let's just like, it's a miracle if that was just miraculously done without intention, where it just kind of happened, like Tommy created it. Like stuff like that, like geniuses would have to go out of their way to create. Like,
and
he is.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. It's like, this movie could not have been made on purpose like it is. Like, this movie is so ridiculous and hilarious because it's an oxymoron. You couldn't make, like, there's no way anyone could ever write this shit as a parody.
It's
that's what I really appreciate. It's like, this is such a fucking swing and a miss. And like, my like favorite kind, like movies I like, either love movies that are like they're great or they're terrible. Like middling movies, I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, there's this great Francis Ford Coppola quote where he's talking about like when he's making Apocalypse Now, and he's just like when you like really fucking try and you just like completely fail, people are like, oh, this is some like fucking pretentious garbage. That's the best kind of bad movie, is just a movie where it's like, wow, they really went for it and absolutely nothing works. That's why I would say everyone who likes this movie should go out immediately and watch Cats, because that is another movie that is just like, what the fuck is happening?
I can't.
Here?
I really?
It's just like this where it's just like so bad. And there's so many baffling choices.
But you think that it can get like the same, not maybe like the same amount of uproaring enjoyment or like, just enjoyment that I get from The Room, but you think it's still like entertaining for that same reason?
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I would say it's because it's, there's so many choices that are like so bizarre. Like Rebel Wilson like takes off her skin and she's got another skin and she gets the cockroaches, and you're like,
and then Idris Elba gets coronavirus.
Damn.
Oh my god. It's and it's not just like, you know, like a movie like other bad movies, they're just like, okay, this is just kind of like dumb and boring and there's like bad acting. This is like everything. The acting is fucking terrible. The lines are terrible. Nothing makes sense.
Isn't it just ending, adapted like, from the Broadway musical?
What was that?
Yeah, but, oh, yeah, but it's adapted the CGI. From the musical, it's all which is the also CGI not good. That's
oh,
all
yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's Broadway. I really, yeah, like, do a whole every April Fool's Day next year on Cats. We can talk about that later.
We'll do it on Cats, can't. Yeah. I might. I don't know if I could bring myself up to watching it even once. It's
I'll
just.
Do it.
It would just like be. It's so nightmare fuel. It's so much
it
nightmare
really
fuel.
Is. It really. And but the thing is about Cats is like this movie. There's no like, why did nobody make sense that like there's this like nobody actors, but like Cats was made by like a guy who's won an Academy Award for Best Picture and Best Director, and like there's really good actors in it, and you're like, I mean, Idris Elba, what the fuck?
The CGI was very primitive at the time of the making of The Room, so it can't be as advanced as Cats.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Oh
those
my god, that rooftop
could have easily been made.
Yeah.
They could have just
on
shot
a rooftop,
on rooftop
in San Francisco.
Like they're shooting in
that's
San
not
Francisco.
How movies work, Derek.
Those aren't how work. You have to do it like they do in Hollywood.
Yeah, this is big Hollywood CGI.
I bet that's a direct quote from the disaster artist.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what they're quoting. Yeah. I mean, he recreated the alley outside of the alley.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
this movie. It's just watch it. You know, like it's
if you haven't
a fucking train wreck. You know, I'm saying like any listeners, if you haven't already, yeah, it's a fucking train wreck. And it's a train wreck that you can't look away from.
Yeah.
Like, it is so fucking bizarre. Like, I remember seeing it on Adult Swim, and I was just like, what is this? And I didn't watch it all then. Like, I would flip, I was watching something else, and I kept flipping back to it. Like between commercials, I'd be like, let me just go back to this channel and see more of this insane thing. Like, what
stop.
Is happening here?
You have to finish it. And the ending is just... I don't know.
Anywhere, like, you know, it's like a slow motion shot, but it's clearly not done with a slow motion camera, and there's no squibs or anything. It's just like
Saving Private Ryan. I mean, Steven Spielberg could not have.
Well, no, I mean, like, the whole, like, when Mark, like, wake up, Johnny, wake up, and there's, like, there's clearly, like, too much blood around him.
Oh, yeah, no, it's like, there's blood coming out of his mouth. There's blood coming out of the back of his head. The whole floor is covered in blood. And then the first thing that Greg yells when he walks in, when he runs in, is Johnny, wake up.
Oh, yeah. And then we caught that Denny said Tom slipped a Tommy in there.
Yeah.
And like, Greg, Mark is blaming. He's like, you did this, Lisa. I'm like, dude, you also were like involved. Like, oh, yeah. It's like, oh yeah,
this is he a killed weird himself because his
best friend slept with his fiance or his future wife, I should say.
Yeah, it's like, let's just have this whole redundant argument over my friend's body. Yeah. Blood all over.
Oh my god.
And then Denny comes and he's like, both of you get out. Leave us alone.
Okay, is Danny supposed to be mentally handicapped? Like,
no, he's in college. He's in college. No,
he's supposed to be like the kid friend.
Yeah, he's 18 and he's in college.
But he acts like he's like an 8-year-old.
I know.
He seems to have the mental capacity of an 8-year-old.
It's because I think he wrote him like that. Like, I think he thought, hey, an 18-year-old is like a kid. I guess I'm gonna write him like that.
27-year-old who's bald now,
but he's also he's also like somebody who wants to definitely like is like it's like a teenager that wants to be in a threesome just because he's heard about it on the street or like, something.
Exactly
the way he goes, and he's just like, I like Lisa, I want to kiss her. I'm like, what is happening?
Is this how Tommy is? I mean, he's a kid. This is how he was when he was a kid. You know, it's like, yeah, kids talk like that. It's like how South Park's like, oh, this is how we talked when we were kids. And it's like, this is how Tommy talked when he was 18 years old, 27.
Yeah, well, I mean, any other final thoughts, guys?
Watch Best Friends, Volume 1.
Oh, yeah, watch Best Friends, too. Watch The Room first, and then...
Inspiration. Make your own movie.
Yeah, watch Best Friends. It was actually, it's not the other side, so it's Greg Sestero's movie. It is very still weird, but at least cinematically, it's very good. Like, and part of it was was filmed actually in Santa Ana because they were like screening some of it. And
Los Angeles is too expensive.
Yeah, and they like filmed at the courthouse. Like, just walking
around.
They
did. I remember that. Yeah. And they had, like, a shot of the whole courthouse. Like, that's not Los Angeles.
Yeah, because they did a screening of The Room at the Frida. Which is, we're talking local. I'm sorry. And then,
Yeah, if you guys are living, you know, the middle of Orange County, then California, you'll get this. Sorry for anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you live in the United States of
America. Yeah. Also, it's also the only other movie that features Santa Ana is the end of Rain Man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the train station. I drove by that. I was in that went by that train station like every day for like 4 years.
You know what else? Oh, yeah. That train station? What? My sister's wedding.
Oh, gosh. Okay. All right.
Three classics right there.
But yeah, definitely, I would suggest watching this, then watching The Disaster Artist, so you get who Greg Sestero is, and then going and watching Best Friends Volumes 1 and 2.
I would read the book too, the Disaster Artist book. That one, I read it before the Disaster Artist movie came out, and it was just, obviously the movie can only tell you so much, but the book really just goes into so much detail about like what Greg was thinking, what he thought Tommy was thinking, like their friendship, like
detail that that Disaster Artist does not go into.
Yeah, you can't really go into it. Like, it's just so like, I don't know, like you feel bad for everyone involved, but at the same time,
God,
they kind of came out making this crazy,
yeah,
fucking weird, wonderful, weird, strange motherfucking piece of a movie.
Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, watch Home Alone so you can fully get into the mind of Greg and just immerse yourself in the world.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, guys, for listening. We appreciate it. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Just, you know, go ahead and like us, like and subscribe, hit that bell, follow us on our socials. And then Ariel, you have your Nerd Incorporated.
Yeah, Nerd Incorporated on Nerd Incorp on Instagram. That's where we do comic book related stuff, cosplay things, DC. We're hoping to kick that off a bit more in the coming months. Hopefully doing a bit more content. We're kind of in a lull, especially with the convention slowing down and getting canceled.
Everything going on in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we have District 6 for technology and some gaming information. And then Derek has, we do Marvel podcasts, which hopefully we'll be picking up once Marvel content continues.
Yeah, we'll see when that happens because yeah. Everything is canceled.
Yeah, we were hoping to do an overview of at least the Disney Plus shows coming out. And doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thanks everybody. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you soon with another one.
Bye. Thanks for being amazing.
See you in another life.
Thanks, guys, and be safe out there. Wash your hands.
Why? So serious? Why so serious? Why so serious? Let's put a smile on this face. Why so serious?